Blog Talk Radio.
Pen, I'm Coach Pen. Hello, everybody out there. I'm Coach Pan. It's been a long 7 or 8 weeks. I can't even remember since the last time I was on. It was a while ago, that's for sure. But I am back. Enjoyed my bye week. I was actually going to do a show last week, but I decided to delay it 1 week because I knew there were a couple big games this weekend, and I wanted the show to lead into all that fun stuff because there's so many games this weekend that have major playoff implications, and seems to be a lot of teams jockeying for those final playoff spots, and there's lots of controversy and a lot of things going on out there, and that's basically what I'm going to have to talk about on my show. I got a couple guests on tonight: head coach Timothy Holmes of the Carolina Phoenix, the undefeated Carolina Phoenix, and they've managed to lead the league in points scored so far this year, so congratulations to them. They are tier two. Then I'm hoping, I haven't heard back from him, but head coach Jason Fernald of the New England Intensity, he's also supposed to be on, but I know he said he was having email problems, so I don't know if he got my email. I hope to have him on later. They are also undefeated in fighting for a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference Northeast. It's very possible that those two coaches could face off in the playoffs. And finally, I'm going to have the dual head coach of John Konecki, head coach of the Chicago Force, and also head coach of Team USA on later in the show. So four head coaches on. You got to count me. I'm the head coach too. Just so you know, all opinions and things I say are that of my own and not a representation of the IWSL or the California Quake, who I am a coach for. I just speak my mind and get those thoughts out there to basically spark up conversation. Everybody is welcome to call in. I'm going to have a lot of very interesting things to talk about. And if you are at some of the games, because I'm going to recap some of the big games from this year and give you my analysis, as I've watched a ton of film. And if you have some tidbits to throw in, you know what? Go ahead and call in. 347-826-7278. Rarely has anybody ever called in that wasn't already scheduled to be on, but just so you know, you're welcome to. Okay? I welcome it, and your opinion will be listened to and debated. I'll give you my honest opinion right from the drop. I'd like to welcome you, those who are online at blogtalkradio.com with the WFB Talk Continues chat room. A couple people in there. I see a couple of guests in there. Let me see. Oh, I got a couple, several people in there. And then also Sports Geeks is in there, too. So what's up, Sports Geeks? Nice seeing you guys. See you guys all the time on the main board. So welcome to the show. So tonight, let me start off. I got the playoff picture. I'm going to go over that. Remember, this is an IWFL-only show. I don't have time to cover both leagues. Last year, I was able to do that, but I knew that this year I was not going to be able to. So, and plus, I have access to all the film from the IWFL and probably have more knowledge of the teams there. So I'm strictly IWFL-based. So we're going to go over the playoff pictures, the Massey ratings, how that's being incorporated into what teams make the playoffs, the good, the bad, and the absurd. My Clint Eastwood version of a spaghetti western. We have the good, the bad, and the absurd. That's the teams that are, you know, trying to get in or trying to get screwed and not get in. And so you'll get my opinions on that, and I really, really would like to hear from what y'all think about it. The leagues listen to the shows, and while they might not like some of the feedback, I know that they listen, and it goes into some of their decision-making processes, you know, because it's great to get feedback from everybody, warranted and unwarranted, so you know how the product can be improved. After I go over the playoff picture, I'm going to probably talk with Coach Konecki, bring him in here. Then I'm going to do a season recap. I'm going to go over the big games. I have like 15 big games so far this year. I know every game is a big game to every single team out here, but these are the ones that tickled my fancy and actually made me download the film and watch it because it was either an interesting score, a shocking score, or a very close battle. And I am not going to apologize for my West Coast bias. I grew up on the East Coast, and I know that East Coast always leaves out the West Coast, and West Coast always thinks highly of themselves probably more so than they should, but I'm just more familiar with the teams out here, so there's probably more of those games in there than other teams. After I talk with all the coaches, I'm going to go over the big games remaining this week. There are four major games that I'm going to go over, and we're going to talk about some home field advantage type situations. And then in the final 2 weeks, I have about five games that I want to just put out to people, say, hey, these might be interesting going to if you're around there. So without further ado, I'm going to hop right into that playoff picture. Hopefully Coach Holmes is on the line. If he is, BJ, go ahead and let him through, and he's going to spitball with me when I go over some of this stuff. She actually says that he is not online right now, so I will just go over what I have. Let's see. Let's start in the Tier 2 division. We'll start in the Eastern Conference. Now, let me explain something. The Massey rating and the rating overall rating system that they're using is different than last year. Last year they had two different percentages for Tier 1 and Tier 2 games, and I am a proponent of you should only play Tier 1 teams if you're Tier 1. You should only play Tier 2 teams if you're Tier 2. A couple teams are getting away with that. So Carolina Phoenix are one of them. They're only playing Tier 2 teams. Hurrah to them. We'll get into the negatives of that later. But right now, it's the Massey rating plus your winning percentage gives you an overall rating. The top two teams in each division make the playoffs. So it's not the four highest in each conference. It's the top two in each division. And then the team that wins the division post round one with the team that came in second, traveling to them. And the winner of those two divisional games then play each other. And the winner with the highest Massey rating coming out of there is the host. Now, they do not reset the Massey rating at the end of the year. It's what it's based on for after the playoffs are played. So after games on June 5th, whatever comes out that Monday or late Monday night, Tuesday morning, on the Massey rating is how they're set for the remainder of the playoffs, which is only one additional round. But still, that could be huge if, you know, somebody's ranked higher and there's a couple upsets. Somebody might actually have a home game they weren't anticipating or, you know, stuff like that. So that's what I want to do, clear up some of the Massey rating stuff. And so the Eastern Conference right now in the Northeast, it's pretty close up there. Southeast, not so much. Southeast, it looked like the Phoenix got it. They're 6-0. They play two more teams. And let's see who exactly they play. And hopefully he'll be on there. They play the Palm Beach Punishers at Palm Beach, so they have to travel. This is a team they've already beaten. They've only allowed 2 points so far this year, and it was during the first game on a safety. And then they play the Louisville Nightmare at home to finish out the season. So basically they have two wins because they play two opponents they've already played, and they're probably just going to be practicing up for the playoffs, making sure they got their fundamentals out. One thing unique about them is, as a Tier 2 team, usually Tier 2 teams have smaller rosters, smaller budgets. And so when somebody gets hurt, other people have to step up. Well, I was the head coach of the Western team last year at the All-Star game, and number 5, Jennifer King, she plays for the Carolina Phoenix. She just obliterated us in the All-Star game. We couldn't cover her to save our lives. Guaranteed, we didn't have all of our skilled people playing because the majority of the skilled people that came were in the championship game. So they were not so much excluded, but they were not in the right mindset or physical ability after playing and then partying all night. So, but Jennifer King just killed us. Well, the first game this year, the Carolina Phoenix starting quarterback got hurt, and Jennifer King went from wide receiver / running back to kind of like a Pat White type quarterback. So she's doing a lot of running, a lot of passing. She basically is that whole offense over there. She's very explosive, very elusive, and just an overall great athlete. So I don't see Carolina Phoenix having any trouble locking up the playoffs. They'll most likely be playing the Chattanooga Locomotion in the playoffs. The Chattanooga Locomotion, actually, they have 3 games left, so they have 3 games with no bye left, and they're going to be, oh, no, they have to make up a game, and I don't know if they're actually going to have that one made up. because if it is, it's got to be made up on the 29th. So it says that the game was postponed, but who knows? There's only one date they can fill. So they finished up the season against the Carolina Queens. So if the Carolina Queens can beat the Chattanooga Locomotion twice, then it would be a third game against them this year. So I heard Coach Holmes is on. Coach Holmes, you there?
Yes, I am.
There he is. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm surviving. Beautiful Long Beach weather we're having. You know, it's nice, sunny, blue sky, no clouds, and 75 degrees.
Yeah, rub it in, rub it in, rub it in.
Well, I mean, you're on the East Coast. It's similar to that over there, just with a lot of humidity. That's all, right?
Very humid. You can cut the air with a knife sometimes.
Oh, I know. I grew up down there. It's not a little bit further south, but yes, I got it. So I just finished covering your team, and I'm going over the playoff thing. So just stay on the line, and I'm going to finish covering the Eastern Conference, and then me and you will spitball back and forth about some of the Massey stuff, okay?
Okie doke. I'm right here.
All right. So you got the Chattanooga Locomotion and the Carolina Queens facing off the last 2 weeks of the regular season. Carolina wins both games. They're most likely in. Chattanooga split or wins both. They're in, and that's who the Phoenix will be playing. The Eastern Conference is a little bit more top-heavy. Got the Montreal Blitz undefeated, New England Intensity undefeated, and the Jersey Justice with only one loss. So basically, there's a three-way battle going on there, and that's pretty intense for, you know, a playoff spot. I would say the Jersey Justice probably not going to make it unless they can upset a Tier 1 team in the Baltimore Nighthawks. They have the Binghamton Tiger Cats, which when they beat them, it's not really going to help their Massey rating too much. So it will help their winning percentage, and then they go to Baltimore. They can get pull that one off. They have a very good chance of jumping the New England Intensity, who right now is undefeated. And they've only played 5 games, so they still have 3 left. They play the Erie Illusion twice and the Southern Maine Rebels. Now, the Erie Illusion this week will really dictate whether or not New England is going to have difficulty going undefeated. I mean, Erie's had a pretty good season. They're 3-3. They got beat up by Pittsburgh in the first week of the season. They lost to the Wisconsin Warriors 19-0, and then they crushed Louisville, which a lot of teams seem to be doing. So these last 2 games for Erie will be big for both teams, Erie trying to fight to get a winning record and New England trying to fight for a playoff spot. And then, of course, we have the Montreal Blitz, who has 2 years in a row played for the Tier 2 IWSL Championship. They have a similar road ahead of them. They have the Southern Maine Rebels, who they've already beat, and the Connecticut Crushers, who they did beat, but it was only 22-0, and it was at Connecticut, and they have to go back to Connecticut again. So, I mean, a lackluster showing against Connecticut could let one of the other teams slip in. Now, here's the big thing that Coach Holmes is going to be able to interject on with me. The Massey rating, which I already discussed, is part of the overall rating. Now, when the Eastern Conference division games happen, let's just say Montreal and New England play each other. Both undefeated teams going at it. Carolina plays Chattanooga, and they go at it, and Carolina and Montreal, let's say, went out. The Massey ratings has Montreal very, very much higher than the Carolina Phoenix right now. The Montreal Blitz are 18th, and the Carolina Phoenix are, was it 20th? 20th, so that's only one real spot, but the amount of points and difference is substantial. It's almost a tenth and a half. So, and I know that it's huge, but because Montreal got a big win against a Tier 1 team, they jumped up so many spots, just like the Bay Area Bandits, I would call them the San Francisco team, the Bay Area Bandits did last week after they defeated the Tier 1 LA Amazon. So, Coach, you know, what are you looking to do to help your Massey rating, knowing that you've killed everybody? Point spread really doesn't matter past 28, and with what's in your hands, how do you look to impress the computers, as they say in college football?
Actually, that's impossible. The only thing we can do and control our fate is to win out. And, you know, there's beyond winning the rest of our games, there's nothing we can do to control what Massey does to, you know, push them up there. We don't have a Tier 1 team on our schedule, which is unfortunate, but it's just the way that it is, and nothing we can really do about it but play the rest of our game.
And that's something I mentioned earlier in my show in the introduction was that you were one of the few teams playing within your tier. And I'm not going to say that hurt you because, truthfully, that's how I think it all should be, but because people are playing cross-tier, it is really hurting you because you don't have that chance to not only prove yourself with a victory but prove yourself with a close game to a Tier 1 team and maybe jump up some.
Yeah, that's true.
Nothing
we could do about it because it's unfortunate. If you look at Wisconsin over on the west side of it, they played 3 Tier 1 teams, and they're 3-3 and still rank high in their division. So even if you lose to the team, you get the bump from playing them. So I would at least like that opportunity.
And then that's one of my qualms with I don't know if it's, you know, an actual issue, but it's just the fact that wins should count for something, and winning percentage is part of the formula, but it's like their losses to Tier 1 don't matter. You know, it's like you get bonus points for playing Tier 1, and that's something I really don't get. I mean, what I did is I basically copy and pasted the Massey rankings into a spreadsheet and broke it down to how it should be. It should be, the Massey ratings, first of all, should be split up into two different rankings. Should have all Tier 1 teams and all Tier 2 teams ranked separately, and they shouldn't even be, I understand that because teams play each other, that there's going to be overlap, but there's no reason that you guys should be ranked with Tier 1 teams. It has nothing to do with how you get to the playoffs. And unfortunately, those games are playing. And some of the things I wanted to ask you was, do you feel as though that's something you're going to request from your ownership next year and say, hey, listen, you know, if teams are playing Tier 1 and Tier 2, make sure there's a Tier 1 on our schedule at least once.
Well, we asked for that anyway. And initially was, actually, I probably shouldn't say that, so I'm going to leave that part of it alone. But, yeah, I asked management to, secure us the best way to get to the playoffs because it's no coincidence that the teams that get to the finals are the home team. And, you know, at this level, it's just unfortunate. But, like, when we went to Montreal 2 years ago, I didn't have 3 starters. So missing 3 starters is huge, and it's not anything we could do about it. They had to work. I mean, they have to, you know, earn a living and all, whatever, you know. That's neither here nor there. I don't want to sound like I'm trying to spill milk or whatever, but it makes a difference if you're the home team. And, you know, last year we didn't control our fate. We had our fate in our hands. Massey had us ranked as number one as far as those teams go, and we lost the game on the road. Now, that's our fault, so I won't even complain about Massey on that one. But this year it looks like, if things go well, we're going to be 8-0, and I can't really look my girls in the face and tell them they didn't do everything I asked them to do and have to go to Montreal still. I don't see what that's right, especially when we were 5 places higher than them when we started. I mean, we started the season at 16 in Massey, and now we're 20, and we've only done anything but win. So, you know, you get penalized for winning? I don't understand, and somebody has to explain it to me why we dropped 4 places and we won all of our games.
Yeah, and it'd be different if, you know, you had teams that were ranked separately because, I mean, Bay Area beats a very good Tier 1 team. Wisconsin has been killed by any Tier 1 team they've played. Montreal they haven't played any real Tier 1 team. I'm sorry if you're one of the Tier 1, or the teams out there listening, if I just called you unreal as a Tier 1 team, but they haven't faced anybody that's, you know, a playoff caliber Tier 1 team as like the Bay Area and Wisconsin has. And
right.
Who else is ranked higher than you? I think that's it. There's only 3 teams ranked higher than you as a Tier 2?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. There's only 3 teams ranked higher than you, and it's you know, I can understand Bay Area. Montreal, you know, neither here nor there, but I mean, in my rankings, I have my own rankings, and I think right now I have you as number 1, Bay Area is number 2, Montreal is number 3, Warriors is number 4, New England is number 5. That's my top 5 just based on what I've seen on film and, you know, based on the competition you've played. I mean, you've superiorly dominated every single opponent you've played, and that's really what football's about. It's like whatever schedule you're given, take care of business and do what you do. I understand why the league incorporated the Massey ratings, because some people had easy schedules and were going 8-0 or 7-1 with a completely easy schedule, and then they get to the playoffs and they get killed because they didn't play anybody during the regular season. And I get the purpose of it. I just don't think it's being executed exactly right. And because nobody knows the exact way the Massey thing is handled, we really can't, argue with and just complain and point out things that we disagree with, right?
Exactly. Massey to me is for the Phoenix is just a mystery. For the 3 years they've been ranking us there, we've never ranked higher than 16th ever. And we posted a 5-1 season, 7-1 season, a 7-1 season, and now going to be an 8-0 season. And, what do we have to do? Somebody needs to explain to me what I need to do.
Yeah, exactly. 2 years ago when the Quake went 8-0, we made it all the way up to 22nd. And then we went to Dallas, the inferno that it was at 115 degrees at 3 o'clock when they decided to put the kickoff and got mutilated. And it kind of proved Massey right in that we weren't as good. But I guarantee you, that was a normal temperature. It would have been a much closer game, and it just sucks that it comes down to, preseason rankings, which is my biggest problem with the Massey ratings. If they didn't start rankings till week four, after 3 weeks of football is played, it might make more sense. But when week one, when there's rankings and nobody's played a game yet, this is not the NFL. This is not college football. This isn't even high school football where you have so many people coming back. You have no clue who's coming back until you have your last tryout.
Right.
And every year it's a brand new team. 2 years ago I went 8-1. Last year we went 4-4, and this year we're sitting on 5-1. So it's like, and every single of those 3 years, it's been a completely different team.
Absolutely.
So it's funny that to me how they can have a ranking in week one when nobody knows who the hell anybody is in week one.
I know. They say that last year doesn't matter, but I find it hard to believe. And even if it did, we were always in the Final Four, and we're never the top four Tier 2 team. So I just, explain that to me, too.
I just don't get it. And I don't get it either, but, it's one of those things that, I call the good, the bad, and the absurd. And I would put you in the bad. It's not quite absurd yet, but you're definitely in the bad. You're kind of, yes, you're only a little bit behind, but it's just, what else can you do? You've done everything you're supposed to do, and the thing that impresses me most is that you clearly dominated every single opponent on film, not just on the scoreboard, but on the film that you actually watch, and it amazes me. You've scored 309 points in 6 games. I thought my team was pretty good, scoring 290, and then you got the KC Tribe, who scored like 296 or something like that. So, offensively, for you to be ranked, let me see, where's your offense? Your offense is ranked, was it 18th in the league?
Yeah.
18th in the league, and you've scored the most amount of points. So where do they get that from? Where does the offensive rank come from if you've scored the most points in the entire league and yet you're ranked 18th in offense? So the Massey ratings is a little bit, that would be one of the absurd things that fall into that category. But, I wanted to wish you good luck on your last 2 weeks. What are some of the things you're looking for against Palm Beach and Louisville? I know you've beat both opponents already, but what are some of the things you're trying to get done to get ready for the playoffs?
Well, first and foremost, we want to try to complete this season. We've played 6 games of shutout defense, and we want to continue that. So, it'd be something to be, unscored on at the end of the year. That's just something we want to talk about. Other than that, we want to clean up some things that we're not really as sharp on as I'd like to be. Our average field allowing our opponents to start on the 38 is a little much. We like to trim that by about 8 or 10 yards. We want to get that back inside the 30 where our defense is always at the advantage. We want to make sure we're getting our snaps a little better. We're getting some that go a little bit high over our head, and we're trying to make sure we got that cleaned up. Just the little minutia things that will hurt you at the end of the season is what we're trying to fix. For the most part, our offense is pretty locked in. Our defense is locked in for the small adjustments that we make there. We just got just a few little things we want to clean up, and I think we'll be ready for a really good postseason.
Well, that's good to hear. Yeah, it's funny that you say starting field position, because I'm a big, big follower of stats. Huge follower of stats. And your kicker and my kicker have kicked off the most.
Yeah.
What is your kicker's name?
Aaron Graham.
No. Yeah, Aaron Graham. My kicker's kicked off 43 times. She's kicked off 36 times. The difference is that she has a 44-yard kickoff, which is, that's the 15-yard line.
Yeah.
So, I've seen some of these kickoffs, and it's like, whoa, look at that kick. And so what's going on with your kickoff unit then if she's kicking them so deep that they're getting such good starting field position? Because, I mean, we don't kick it that far yet. We hardly ever let somebody start across the 40.
It's the classic case of out-kicking your coverage. She has a huge leg, and, you know, the speed is still speed. We don't have, you know, 4-4 girls. If we have 4-4 girls, we could be there by the time the ball lands. We got probably 4-8 to 5-2 girls, and they're getting down there, and they have time to get to the center. So I don't know if I want to tell her to kick it shorter or just keep it going the way it's going, but we'll figure it out. We're still working. That's one of the things we're working on in special teams. So, special teams coach. Go ahead.
No. I was listening to your special teams coach, yeah.
Yeah, special teams coach Lee Holmes is doing a good job with it, so we're trying to get it right. We'll get there.
Well, that's one of the things that I've always noticed in women's football is that, I mean, is Erin a soccer player?
Oh, yeah, she was a soccer player.
Okay, yeah, the girl that kicks for us, Kara, she's a former college soccer player, too, so she just wants to drill that ball. It's just like trying to get them out of the mindset of kicking for a goal or striking the ball is different than put some air underneath it so we can tackle them as soon as they catch it. And, you know,
absolutely.
Kara's been playing since 2004, so she kind of gets it, but it still frustrates her when I tell her, I was like, don't you kick that thing as hard as you can. You put it as high as you can, as deep as you can, not as far as you can. And then every now and again, I say, okay, just kick it. And she'll get a touchback, and she'll be so happy that I let her kick it and just be super excited. And I was just like, see, you just got to let me coach, okay? Let them all come up, and then I'll let you kick it. So it's funny on those things. And make sure to send me an email to remind me about sending you some stats fixtures. Do you do stats for your team, or do you have somebody else do it?
I have to do it myself, sir.
Well, if I do them too, so I know, but I've actually figured out the stat program to actually incorporate every single stat, because if you'll notice, has Aaron ever kicked it to the end zone and never been returned?
Yes.
Okay, well, she's on the Lee website as having zero touchbacks. I am the first person to find that actual code that works. So,
wow.
Make sure you send me an email, and I can send you the codes that you can change them and actually have your stat line, because we're the only team that actually returns kickoffs for non-touchdowns. Everybody else has zero return yards. They only have one that return for touchdown. Yeah, so I have all those codes, so make sure to send me an email to remind me to send that to you so you can fix that up, and our stats program on the IDF website can be much more complete.
Wow, thank you. I'll make sure I do that.
All right, Coach. Well, thank you very much for being on the show. It was great getting to talk to you. Have a great final two games. Hope you fix that staff and that starting field position. And I look forward to seeing you in Texas. And what is it, July 24th or so?
Yes, sir. We look forward to being there.
All right, sir. Thank you. You have a wonderful night. Feel free to stay on. I got lots of issues, and you can always chime in, okay?
I'll hang on.
All right, so that was Coach Holmes, head coach of the Carolina Phoenix, the undefeated Carolina Phoenix. Tier 2 looking to push his way into the playoffs and hopefully secure more than just one home playoff game, knowing that home team advantage is so huge in women's football. That's a topic that I'll be covering later in the show. But first, I'm going to go over a couple of the games that I wanted to talk about for the season recap and my analysis. Like everybody knows, I watch a ton of footage. And if you have some games that you want to talk about with me, 347-826-7278. First off, I'm going to start with some, I guess, games that actually procrastinate. I don't even know how to put it. They actually showed you some things to come. The first will be Portland Shockwave at the Bay Area Bandits. The Bay Area Bandits Tier 2 beat the Portland Shockwave, 13-0. Now, that was a Tier 2 team beating a Tier 1 team. Later in the season, the Bandits would go down to L.A. Now, all L.A. had to do in the final three games was win out, and they were in the playoffs. They would have owned the tiebreaker against us. Hit both of us at 7-1. They would have went in over the Quake. Well, the Amazons were up 22-6 with 5 minutes left. And the Bandits scored with 2:34 left, onside kick, got the ball, scored. 1 minute left. They onside kicked, scored with, I think, 11 seconds left to take the lead at 26-22. And then when the Amazons got the ball left and trying to do some big things, they got a pick six. So that's why it ended up 33-22. So they actually have had a great year. They have a chance to continue their winning ways against the Tier 1 team when they play the Scorpions the final 2 weeks of the season. Other big games that have been make or break for the Eastern Conference in Tier 1, the Divas and the Sharks. The Sharks pulled out that first victory against the Divas, and it was a thrilling game, 13-19. I mean, it was a defensive battle. Very, very good teams right there. A couple weeks later, we had the Sharks play, or no, the Divas played Boston, and it was just a shootout like the Amazons and Quake did. And then the Sharks played Boston and just got killed. So it's kind of who hit miss, all the fun stuff, but I think D.C. and Boston do play again in Boston, so that'll be another exciting game to look forward to. Couple firsts we had this year. The Iowa Crush got their first victory against the Louisiana Fuel, 14-12. And for those of you who don't know much about the Iowa Crush, they hadn't won a game in, I think, 18 games or something like that. And so far this year, they have won 3 games. So I'd like to throw a little congratulations out there to the Iowa Crush for getting some victories and proving that it is better to just keep fighting, building your team, than just fold and quit. Another game that was, I would say, not so much exciting, but the Southern California Breakers and Modesto Maniacs. Modesto got their first win ever, 12-0. Congratulations to Modesto. That might just be enough to put you into the playoffs. We'll talk about that absurd scenario later. But yes, they got their first victory, and that is something to be commended and to be recognized because, I mean, victories are hard to come by, and it always means something, especially when you've been losing for 3 years, to show that you are working towards getting better as a team. All right? The big, big games that are out there have to deal with the Chicago Force, the KC Tribe, the Dallas Diamonds, the, let's see, who else is out there, the Atlanta Explosion, Houston Energy, Amazon, Scorpions, Quake. Those are all big games that I'm going to talk about later. But since I have Coach Konecny on the phone, head coach of the Chicago Force and Team USA, he had his first big game victory this year when the Force upset the Tribe. And I'm not insulting you when I say upset. Won 14-12 because KC did take 2 of 3 last year and was defending champs. Actually, they still are defending champs, but they now have a loss where Chicago is undefeated and has basically home field advantage wrapped up for that playoff scenario. So they still play each other again, but let me go ahead and welcome in Coach Konecny. Are you unmuted?
Hey, Coach Penn, how are you doing this evening?
I am doing wonderful, sir. The kids off to bed, everything good?
Yeah, everybody's asleep, and I'm out in the best place I get reception, out in the car.
Out in the car. I'm out on my porch. So, yes, we're both outside. But thanks a lot for being on the show. I know both it's late for you and Coach Holmes out there. I'm a West Coaster. It's still early over here, but I do appreciate you being on the show. I know you've done one radio show. Yeah, I know you've done one radio show with the Team USA when you're talking to the ladies at WSB Talk. But I want to get some different stuff from you. And congratulations so far on the season. You're having a great year. Ranked, number 4 in the Massey ratings?
Yeah, number 4 in the Massey ratings, yep. Mm-hmm.
And feel free to input on anything that you overheard because I know that I wasn't bringing you on to discuss the Massey ratings, but I know you have feelings, and if you want to vent, feel free to vent on my show.
I think it's the program that's in place, and it's the program that we all have to play with, and you know, with just like BCS, there are things that transpire that make you kind of scratch your head, and there's other things that transpire that you say, yeah, it makes sense. So
look at that, the very politically correct answer. That was a very good job right there. Oh, man, yeah, it is the system that we have, and we just got to do what we got to do, and hopefully it was enough. I do totally understand that. But let's get on to USA football. You're going to be the head coach. You are and have been for a couple months now, the head coach of Team USA, and for
yes.
the past two seasons, right, you've been the head coach of Chicago Force.
Correct, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so basically since February, March-ish, we'll just say, you've been building two game plans, sort of thing. I mean, you had to watch a lot of film on players, and then you had to basically prepare your team for a season of redemption where you didn't make it back to the championship game, and which you're well on your way to redeeming everything from last year, even though last year wasn't a bad year at all. I mean, I would have loved to have that year last year. So how do you balance both of them?
Josh, you're right. I mean, preparing to get the ladies, selected for Team USA, myself and, the members of USA football, the coaches that helped out. It was a tremendous, tremendous undertaking. And I think we did a pretty good job of trying to find a diverse mix of players. I think we have 45. Well, I know we have 45 women from 20 separate teams across the IWFL, East Coast, Midwest, and the West Coast. And if there was somebody out there who we thought could what it was that we were going to do both offensively and defensively, they definitely went into let's take another look at it again pile. And then we went from there and continued to whittle the roster down. At the same time, we had tryouts going out for the Chicago Force, and then you see players come in, and you're thinking about how do we get this team ready, and there's still a ton of crossover between Team USA and the Chicago Force, and I don't know. I guess I'm really fortunate with the Chicago Force in that I have awesome assistant coaches: Anthony Stone, John Clark, Bill Smith, great owners Linda Bechet and Kim Duffy, who made this season for me, very manageable with trying to wear both hats. And I think we've done a pretty good job. Obviously, we're 6-0, and we've had some players step up in some different areas that we didn't necessarily expect. And obviously, we had that game against the Kansas City Tribe, and that was a game which it was a hard fought battle, and it's one of those games where you want them to go on forever because it's so much fun to be part of.
Well, I don't know if it's fun, but I mean I've been in two heart wrenching games this year, and I wanted them to end as quickly as possible. I'm not sure if I could deal with those 2.7.1 possession games. They did me. I mean. I'm only 30. How old am I again? 33. Yeah, I'm 33, and I'm aging a lot quicker than 33 after this year already.
Sure,
so,
sure. Josh, I think I guess I say that from the standpoint of anytime you're a coach, and for those 60 minutes, just like your players, there's nothing else that matters during those 60 minutes of actual play, and it's for me, it's kind of like my moment of zen, and I only have to focus on the next play. If there's player personnel issues, what's transferring on that field? There's no thoughts about my job, mortgage payments, car payments. How am I going to afford to send my kids to college 20 years from now, et cetera, et cetera.
I do agree with that. Yes, it is an escape. It's your chance to be something else and be
right.
away from your regular life. It's not just the ladies who get the put on the pads. I guess the coaches are in their moments too, where they're away from family, friends, and just doing something that they love. And yeah, I definitely can agree with that. And you actually answered the how to prepare for both. And my next question where, you have to have a lot of trust in your coaches back home. But my follow-up to that is you make the playoffs. You win
okay.
in round one. You have
there's
to
a
go
lot
to
of
Texas
assumption.
For a week. I'm just saying. I'm just saying there's an
right.
assumption here. Just say, You make the playoffs, which you probably already in, and we'll talk about that more later. And then you win round one, and you have to go to Texas for a week, and then Sweden for a week, and then come back and have two practices to get ready for that game to get you into the championship. I mean, how much emotion are you just not so much wasting but using to not fathom how much craziness will be involved in your life at that moment?
I'll tell you when I'm done. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of things that have to happen, you know, but, you know, if you were to you know, just, you know, mess around with that mental model that you proposed, you know, obviously, those are questions that have, you know, come up. And while I'm in Austin in Sweden, my goal and the coaching staff's goal is to represent the United States well and to, you know, walk away with the ultimate goal. And I guess while I'm there, I have to have that laser-like focus on, you know, preparing the ladies that we that have, you know, sacrificed much of themselves to prepare them to get ready for, you know, or whoever our next upcoming opponent is. At the same time, the Chicago Forces will never, you know, in that mental model that you proposed, will never be far from the forefront. And practices will still continue on in Chicago, and I'm very confident that the coaching staff that we're leaving behind is going to do an excellent job in preparing the ladies if all those things that you proposed, you know, were to come to fruition.
All right. Well, you know, and that's I didn't actually write this question down, but I wanted to see what your answer was. And since I got it, I don't know how many specific people from Chicago made the USA football roster. Obviously, you know. How many was that a total?
You put me on the spot here. there was originally seven. I believe there is six right now.
All right, so six. And obviously, these players are very good because they made Team USA. And the practices that are going on back home while all you and those six are in Sweden and Texas are going to be missing them. Do you see a lack of focus, or do you hope that other players see this as their chance to step up and improve themselves as the coaches?
You know, Josh, it's an excellent question. And I'll just kind of, you know, set up what I think about the particular Chicago Force team that I'm currently coaching and the group of ladies that we have. We really love our team because, and this is not a knock on anyone, we really honestly believe that there aren't any superstars on our team. And that's something that we preach all the time, and that we win as a team, offense, defense, special teams. I think, you know, for the players that are going to Sweden, you know, obviously, you know, all of those intangibles that they have, you know, will be missed. But for us, what's been great is we've had tons of players this year step up in ways that if in the beginning of the year, whether they're rookies or veterans, you would have not necessarily thought that they would have been able to answer the call so quickly, and they were and have been able to answer the call very quickly. So I think it's a great opportunity for you to continue to develop the depth of your players. Those players continue to get better, which ultimately, as you know, makes your team, you know, better off. But, you know, in saying that, you know, we still have, you know, the Pittsburgh Passion this Saturday in Kansas City on the 5th. And you know, if we drop both of those games, you know, it's a moot point.
Yes, and it's one of the things that I've been preaching to my team, and my team has been reminding me because I watch so much film, is like, you know, don't worry about who we're playing 2 weeks from now. Worry about who we're playing this Saturday, because right now it's about this. And it's one of the things that I think a lot of teams, especially in women's football, because they haven't been around football a long time, and while people have said it in movies, and there's even a movie named Any Given Sunday, the realization that any team can beat any team on any given day is pretty realistic in women's football. Because it doesn't take much for a mistake to cost you the whole game. I mean, we made three we made probably 7 or 8 mistakes against the Amazons, but 3 cost us the entire game. 3 mistakes. That's not even a handful of mistakes. Cost us the entire game, and it's very important to keep your focus on, like you said, first Pittsburgh Passion, then the KC Tribe, and then playoffs, and then focus everything you have on them, and let your coaches do their job. So
right.
But
I mean, I guess when you say that, Coach, I mean, all you have to do is ask Michigan how it felt when they lost to Appalachian State.
Yeah.
They actually pronounce it differently.
Yep.
In that game.
Yeah,
Appalachian. Yeah, sure. State. But, and that's in any level, high school, college, the NFL, the IWFL, you gotta play the game. You gotta play the game. On paper is great, and it says a lot of things, and it gives you some ideas of where you might match up against a team. But if your team shows up and they're flat and you start turning the ball over and the other team is just has that momentum, the mo on their side. There's not a whole lot you can do as a coach to stop it. I agree with you on that. I mean, that's any team can beat any team any given day.
And I think the two biggest determining factors in women's football is coming out flat and Mr. Momentum. Those two things I have never seen change a game in any sport except women's football as much as they do here. I mean, I've seen such good teams come out flat. I was part of the team Long Beach Aftershock several years ago when I was first coaching. And Aftershock were the original Quake. They had most of the team on there. And we came out to a game, and we were completely flat. And this team was very good. They were up 20-0 on us like nobody's business. I mean, it was still the first quarter, and they were up 20-0. And it's all because they came out flat. They didn't like going to Arizona. They didn't like playing their team because they were bigger and stronger than us, but we were more athletic. And I mean, once we took momentum, Arizona was done. And we ended up winning 32-27. And I've seen it so many times in big football games in women's football. It's just crazy. Whoever comes out and starts out fast, they think that's good enough. But if they're playing a good team, if that other team steals momentum, the game is not in hand by any means. So,
I agree. Yeah, well, thank you very much.
Sorry you had to do it in your car, but I'm sure it was nice and secluded. And you didn't have to worry about waking anybody up in the house.
Absolutely. And, thanks for having me on. And obviously, thanks for doing the show. All the people at Blog Talk Radio do a tremendous job for all the ladies that are involved in women's football. And, I'm very excited, and I know all the ladies are very excited who are, not only part of the Chicago Forest, but the ladies that were selected for Team USA to be ambassadors of the IWFL and ultimately the United States and have an opportunity to compete internationally. You know, Josh, one of the things that, one of the big weights in on our shoulders, going over to Sweden is that, the United States has never lost a game in international competition, ever. Obviously, as a team, that's something that we want to continue on, and that was one of the very first things that the USA football guys imparted to me when I was having my phone interview with them.
Well, yeah, it's a big challenge. I think football is a very American-dominated sport, and I don't see you having too much trouble over there. I think it should be very interesting, sort of like it was for us at the All-Star Game, to mix all the players in such a limited time. I mean, you'll have 100 times more time than we did, but it'll be interesting to see how well you get them all together and how well you guys work as a team. I wish you the best of luck and congratulations on everything. The great season with the Chicago Forest and the selection to Team USA. That's a great honor, and I wish you the best of luck, and hopefully I'll see you again in Austin this year.
All right, Josh. Well, you have a very nice evening. Thanks for having me on, and good luck with the rest of the show, and good luck with the rest of your season.
Thank you, sir. Have a good night.
All right. Take care.
All right. That was Coach Konecki of the Chicago Force and Team USA on. He covered some issues that I wanted to get answered and let everybody know that how hard these coaches work out here, because not every coach dedicates the same amount. I can tell after talking to Coach Holmes, and I've known Coach Konecki for, I think, 2 years now. I met him at the Chicago Force Dallas Diamonds Championship game. I met him then. And I know these these two coaches dedicate a lot of time, especially Coach Konecki this year, reviewing film, taking stats, doing all the things, setting up practice schedules. And the ladies out there who sacrifice their time to play the sport and, you know, pay the money, the coaches do the best they can. And if they're not, you know, you need to talk to management about that, because a coach should be out there for the love of the game to spread and the joy and knowledge that they have to the teams, the team around them. It's a great thing. I mean, I love it. I spend probably, I would say, up to 80 hours a week working on football, and, you know, and that's with a full-time job. So all the players that can't make practice because of a job, I kind of call BS on that sometimes, because I'm like, listen, I have a full-time job, you know, 40 hours a week, and I still manage to put anywhere from 40 to 80 in with football. So I know everybody isn't lucky enough to have an 8-to-5 job like myself to make making night practice easier, but it's just like, you know, everybody has to make sacrifices, and the teams that have the most sacrifices made, you'll usually be the ones winning, because there are lots of people at practice, everything is there, and you can get things done. I mean, let me bring up my friend, Coach Duncan, with the Amazons. He had a hard loss this weekend to a very good team. The Bay Area Bandits are a very good team. They had already beaten a Tier 1 team. He had the game won. He ended up playing some second stringers, and they scored, you know. Still, the game was in hand. I mean, 22-12 is still basically a two-score game, but little mistakes from people not being at practice, you know. I mean, when you have a roster of 45, I would expect 30 to be there, but most teams, you know, don't have a roster of 45, which is the allowable size in the IWFL. You have most teams out there probably have around 30 players, and if, you know, 5 or 10 of those players miss, you have barely 25 people there. That's almost enough. That's a little bit more than enough to scrimmage, but not enough to rotate effectively, because then everybody has to know, like, 6 or 7 positions. So when players decide not to show up or are unable to, it hurts the team. And, you know, the teams that are ranked up top, Boston, Sacramento, Chicago, KC, Dallas, Sharks, us, I mean, we have a lot of people showing up to practice. You know, and it just makes me wonder about, you know, the Nemesis, the Firebirds, the Fury, Nighthawks, you know, Energy, Majestic, the ones down at the bottom, do they have everybody showing up to practice? So let's go back up to the season recap, some big games in my analysis. Thanks again for the two coaches. I know that Coach Holmes is still on. If something strikes your fancy, make sure you chat it up in the board, let me know, and I'll unmute you, and you can put your 2 cents in on Coach Penn's show. Right now, what time is it? Let's see. It's 7:51. It's supposed to go to 8, but I might go a little bit longer because I have lots of stuff to cover. I got lots of information for you. I haven't been on in like 7 weeks, so I want to cover everything. We still have the rest of the playoff bracket to do, which I'm going to do right after the season recap. So the big game in week one was the LA Amazons and the SoCal Scorpions. The last time those teams faced off, it was for a chance to play for a championship in the old league. And the final score was 12-6 or 8-6 or something like that. It was a very, very defensive game. I was there. I remember saying something like, it was not a defensive game. It was basically two offenses that couldn't get anything done. Duncan rode me for that comment. This one had plenty of offense. The final score was 37-26, but that 11-point spread does not tell you the whole story. LA dominated probably the first, I would say, 2.5 quarters. They were up 25 to like 7 or 8. I can't remember which one it was. And all of a sudden, Scorpions came back, and they were up 26-25, like midway through the third quarter. LA ended up scoring again and then pulling away from them on some turnovers, but the Scorpions proved that their 2-year absence, they didn't really miss out on much. I guarantee you, if that wouldn't have been their first game, they would have really liked that. But unfortunately, it was. They started the season off with a loss. So that was there. That was a big game right there. The next big game that I have was the Dallas Diamonds in at the Kansas City Tribe. That was the last two IWFL Tier 1 champions facing off. And that game lived up to it. The score was closer than I think the gameplay was. I think the Tribe probably should have scored 1 or 2 more times. So all those people thinking that it's going to be Dallas has a much better chance in Dallas, yes, you're true because they're home. But KC should have won much bigger. That game was closer because of turnovers in the red zone. And that, something to be said about Dallas' defense. They stepped up when they needed to. So 28-21, that was a big game. Amazon and myself had a very busy season. First four games. The Amazons and us faced off in week three. The Amazons beat the Scorpions, then had a bye, then came to us. So this was only their second game, our third game. And they ended up pulling out the victory 48-36. Basically solidified them as the number one seed in our division. They had yet to play Sacramento. And that game was just heart-wrenching for me because our offense has been on key for most of the year. And our offense directly led to 16 of their points, two touchdowns, an extra point, and a field goal because of turnovers. And they were unforced turnovers. That's what really upsets me. It's not like the defense forced us into a bad situation. We freaking just gave them the ball from bonehead plays by some of our players, which they've learned from. I'm glad that we have that loss because the very next week we had the Scorpions. And the Scorpions basically had to win this game because it was their make or break game. If they lost another game, they knew they were basically out of the playoffs. And that game went down 42-40 us. Wasn't as close as that because they did get us a score with under a minute left and then their onside kick, which didn't travel the necessary 10 yards. But, yeah, we played a really great game defensively. That was the first defensive game we played. You say, how can you play a good defensive game? You allowed 40 points. Well, because we had five interceptions, and every single one of their scores was, I think, over 30 yards. We were breaking in two new DBs back then, and it was man coverage was quite difficult. So that was huge for a huge victory for us because it kept us in the playoff race in case the Amazons slipped up, or if you know Sacramento was not up to where they have been in past years. Well, the following week, Sacramento. Well, I don't think it was the following week. I don't know when it was, to tell you the truth. I don't have the dating in front of me exactly, but the Sirens came down to visit the Amazon and squeaked out a victory 27-26. The interesting thing about that game is the Amazons scored 26 points and had the chance to tie it with like a little less than 2 minutes left or go for the win. Coach Duncan, as would have I, went for the win, didn't get it. Sirens got the ball back, ran out the clock, and that was the game. Tier 2 game that I was hoping the coach from New England Intensity would break down for me because like the one game on my list that I didn't watch the film, New England ended up pulling out a victory 19-18, and that's got to be a close game because I heard somebody was ahead a lot, and then all of a sudden the other team came back and won. So other good games, the Houston Energy at Atlantic Explosion. The Explosion, I think, might have got caught looking ahead to Dallas and overlooked the Energy, and then all of a sudden the Energy kept up with them, and Atlanta barely pulled off a win 21-20. And then finally was the Amazons and Bandits with the Tier 2 team winning a second game against Tier 1. Those are the big games I had. I've seen most of them but that one on film, and they've all been pretty good games. But now let's go back to that playoff picture I was talking about. The playoff picture. Where is that? Playoff picture's right here. I was actually looking at it right here, and I went over the Eastern Conference for Tier 2 and the fact that Montreal, New England, and Jersey are fighting for the Northeast, and Carolina, and most likely Chattanooga, but the Queens have a chance to pull it in there. In the Western Conference, the Wisconsin Warriors are holding their own, mainly because they play a lot of Tier 1 teams. They have 3 losses, 3 wins, sort of very reminiscent of last year. And then the Clarksville Fox are 5-1 behind them. Clarksville Fox is not getting any respect in the Massey rating. So that's why they're so far behind. Looks like a better win-loss team will end up traveling to Wisconsin. Not something I really agree with, but hey, it's not me to judge it. It's just me to comment on it, I guess you could say. It looks like those two are going to be the teams in the Midwest, going to the playoffs. In the Pacific West, you got the Bay Area Bandits. They play the SoCal Scorpions twice to end the season. So they have a big chance to improve their Massey ratings and secure home field throughout the playoffs. or they could drop and give Wisconsin a chance to host. Home field advantage is huge, as Coach Holmes said. Huge. I mean, he's in a little bit different scenario because people have to go to a different country, but still, if you have to travel across the country to play a game, I would say the team that didn't have to travel has a little bit more of an advantage. The tricky part in this little scenario is that the second team making it from the Pacific West will most likely only have one win. See, 1-7. The Modesto Maniacs are 1-4, and they're the highest-ranked one above. And this will fall into the absurd category for the Massey ratings. All right? Modesto is ranked 21st in the Massey ratings. Now, as we've discussed, the Carolina Phoenix are ranked 20th. I play Modesto. I have the utmost respect for that team. But they are not the 20th-ranked team in the league. They average less than 100 yards a game on offense. They've only scored 19 points this year. They've allowed a lot more than that. And Modesto is kind of getting screwed as they play Sacramento 3 times, Tier 1. They play us, Tier 1. And they actually have to play the Seattle Majestics, Tier 1, Portland Shockwave, Tier 1. So the only team they play that is Tier 2 were the Breakers, which they won, and the Bay Area Bandits, which I don't expect them to win. But, I mean, they'll be 1-1 in Tier 2 games, and I guess you could say that's worthy of a playoff spot. So in the games that mattered to their playoff, they might go out as 500%, which that's pretty good. The Breakers, on the other hand, have a little bit more difficult road. They're 1-5 with 2 games left. They play us this weekend, and then they finish up with the Amazon. So they finish up with 2 high-quality Tier 1 teams. They have a much more difficult road to get that last playoff spot. The Tucson Monsoon at 1-4, they have a pretty difficult schedule in the season as well. They play the Scorpions at home, who have already beaten them 54-0. Then they play the Sirens in Sacramento, which could get ugly. Sirens against that defense, I don't know, it's just, that could be a bad game. And then, of course, they finish up in Seattle, against Seattle. And Seattle right now is 0-6, so that might be Tucson's chance to pull off a win and sneak into the playoffs. So that second spot for the Pacific West race is wide open between 3 teams that could all possibly end up 1-7, and then that basically means that it's all up to the Massey rating. The Massey rating is going to decide that. And since I will have played all 3 teams, I know which one will be most deserving. But the problem is, will the Massey ratings agree with that? All right, so that's my little breakdown for the playoffs of Tier 2. All right, any questions on that? You feel free to call in. I feel there's a lot of people online right now listening, and if they don't want to talk, that's fine. But if you do, 347-826-7278, chat with Coach Penn, throw in your little 2 cents, and we'll get it heard. All right? Now let's start with Eastern Conference Tier 1. Boston, New York, Pittsburgh. Looks like Pittsburgh may be out. They have a huge game against Chicago this weekend. They have to go to Chicago. Not advantageous. Chicago's already beat the defending champions at home. Now Pittsburgh, who's having a little bit, I don't know how to put this, a little bit down of the season. I mean, they're a very, very good team, but with Lethal Horton retiring, they're not the same team, I can tell you that. They are a very good team, but they are not the same team without Lethal Horton. I saw her up close and personal in last year's All-Star game. She is phenomenal. She impressed me. I was somebody I always wanted to see in person, and I was quite shocked how small she was and everything that she could do. She played big for being how small she was. The Sharks and Militia looks like they're going to have to play again in the first round of the playoffs. Boston handled them very nicely. Was it last week? I think it was last week, 31-0. So basically just I have Boston penciled in for the Eastern Conference Championship game. Who they will be playing? Not so easy. D.C., who's just had a rough schedule so far, is leading right now because they're really highly ranked in the Massey ratings. They have the worst record out of the 3 teams fighting for the spot, but they have the highest match rating, and that's because they lost to New York, they lost to Boston, and they have a forfeit win, which I don't know how forfeits are counting. I've been told different things, but I have no clue. I'm not even going to get into it. I hate forfeits. I can't believe teams are forfeits, but I'm not going to get into that here. DC has to play Boston one more time, so I think a loss there knocks them out of the playoffs, leading way to either Atlanta or Miami getting in. Now, Atlanta already lost a big game to Dallas, which I did mention. It was 23-3. They have played a lot of Tier 2 teams, Chattanooga, Carolina, Queens, and they finished off with the Clarksville Fox, which I think will be a pretty interesting game to see who can get to the playoffs. Remember, Clarksville's fighting for a playoff spot, too. Miami Fury, they already played the Miami Fury, who's the other one fighting for a playoff spot. So, I mean, it looks like it's probably going to be Atlanta and D.C. based on the scores that I see. Atlanta and D.C. sneaking in or getting in for the Southeast, which, I mean, truthfully, I don't know who would win. I have no clue. They're two very, very powerhouse teams, I guess you would say, and I think it would be a very good game. But whoever wins that game would then have to play Boston, in Boston. And that's Boston right now is by far the most powerful team in the IWFL. That's what I've been seeing. They're a very good team. They do a lot very well. In the West Coast, the Midwest, as I talked to Coach Konecki, Chicago Force are 6-0. They managed to squeak a victory out against the KC Tribe at home. They actually played Pittsburgh this week in that big game I was talking about. Then the other big game this weekend is KC at Dallas. Now, KC won at home, like I mentioned, but now they have to go down to Dallas, and Dallas is a very formidable opponent at home. There's not much discrepancy in their Massey rating. So this game right here is basically a play-in for the playoffs. KC wins, they can lose the Force and still be in. If KC loses, they have to beat the Force and hope that they're ranked higher in the Massey ratings to get in to the playoffs. Dallas has to win, plain and simple. If Dallas doesn't win, they are out. And I think KC and Chicago walk in no matter what happens in their game. And Dallas also has a forfeit on their schedule, so I'm not sure if that hurt them. And that was this past week. KC Tribe, then they go to Houston, and Houston plays them pretty close, much closer than last year, I should say, 34-12 in the first week of the season. So you'll be able to see how the two teams grew throughout the season when Dallas travels to Houston at the end of the season. So June 5th is going to be a big week as well. Then we have the Pacific West, where it's kind of a conundrum right now. There are, truthfully, 5 of the 6 teams could possibly sneak into the playoffs. 5 of the 6. You know, for those of you who were like, what? Just shake your head. Listen to me. 5 of the 6 teams probably could get into the playoffs. We got the Sacramento Sirens at 5-0. LA Amazon at 3-2, who are ranked 2nd right now. 1,000th of a point ahead of us in the overall rating. Quake 3rd. Then the Scorpions. Then the Portland Shockwave. And we're all pretty close to each other, with the exception of Sacramento being ranked so high. They're actually the number 2 ranked team in the Massey ratings right now. So you got Sacramento and LA facing off this week. LA wants to make it to the playoffs. They have to win. They have to win out. And their final games are not easy games. They play Sacramento, then they play Portland, a game that I'll be at because that's a bye, and then they play the Breakers, which they should win. Tier 2 game, but the Breakers have always played them close, especially for the first half. The first half has always been much closer than that final score has been. I mean, last year was like 6-0 at the halftime. So that's a game they really want to get to and make sure that it's for the playoffs. Us, we have the Breakers this week, who is our cross-county rival. It's a big game for us. Where there's usually all of our fans come. It's right down the road from our own stadium. So we should have our support there, so it's a big game for us. Then you have the Scorpions. Scorpions, now that the Bay Area Bandits are ranked so high and in number 3 in the Massey ratings, they have a major opportunity to up their ranking. They still have 3 games left. They've had all their buys against Tucson, which won't really help their ranking, but get some work in and try not to get hurt. Then they finished up the last 2 weeks against Bay Area, home and away. That right there is going to be their chance to push out. They went out, finished up 6-2,
and just hoping for people to lose in front of them so maybe they can sneak in. Portland Shockwave, they probably have the least chance of making the playoffs, but they do have a chance. They finish up the season May 29th. They have a bye this week, and they go to they come to the Amazons to play. Now they play the Amazons 17-0, and it was a lot closer than 17-0 because they turned the ball over at least three times in scoring zone, in the score with the scoring opportunity sitting there. The Amazons kept on picking them, so that was a big game, big loss, because if they would have won that, they would have really been in this mix. But they have a chance for redemption against the Amazons, and then the Quake have to travel up to Portland. And if they beat the Amazons, you better believe that Portland's going to bring the best game for the Quake, because they'll be fighting for that chance for the playoffs. So, I mean, there's a crap load of teams in the West Coast, and the West Coast is funny because we've never, ever gotten, and I say we because I'm on the West Coast and part of this grouping of people, and we have the opportunity this year to be highly ranked in the Massey ratings. Usually the West Coast people don't get any respect from the L.A. has been the only team, and I think with the addition of the Scorpion, it just offset the balance of power. And while I don't think that was right, I'm glad that it does, because now we have some respect, whether it was earned or not. I mean, but I just think it's funny. I mean, you can play out all these scenarios all kinds of different ways, and every single time you'll probably get two different people out of the Western Conference. Whoever does win, Sacramento can go off as undefeated. They have home field advantage. Now, here's where the funniness starts. Say it's the Sirens and us. We have to travel to Sacramento. The Charlotte Force and KC Tribe both get in. You know, that's four very good teams in the playoffs, that's just crazy. I mean, to say that, and I'm not disrespecting any teams that have made it, the Sirens being back on top of their game is huge, because they won, was it, three in a row a couple years back, and they've had that Coach Brown come back. He was back last year trying to build that program back up, and obviously he's doing a very good job as they're 5-0 right now. So, I mean, I've talked to a couple of these coaches, and it's pretty cool to hear them. And, you know, we were kind of mad that Sacramento wasn't on our schedule this year. So we're hoping that things work out the way that we anticipate, and we get to play Sacramento, because it would be great to have that rivalry renewed. You know, this is only the second year out of 10 years of an existence of the Quake that they haven't played the Sirens. So we're looking forward to hopefully making the playoffs and getting a chance to play on the field with them, because they're a very good team. They're very, very sportsmanship's huge with the Sacramento Sirens, and we've always enjoyed playing them. And I look forward to hopefully making the playoffs and doing that. But first things first, this week we got the Breakers, and then we got to go up to Portland for that fun game. And I'll be at the Amazon Portland game, because we ain't got nothing else better to do. Might as well just go scout the team. Very, very rarely do teams have a chance to go scout the team in person and watch and see what it is, because usually it's just a surprise when you see the team on the field and find out what their speed is, because it's never the same as it is on film. So, let's go. Big games remaining. I've talked about it. This week is KC Dallas, Passion at the Force, Erie at New England, and LA at Sacramento. Is there a home team advantage? Guarantee you three of those teams win that are home. The only one I am not sure of is Dallas KC. And with all the talk I'm hearing, most people think if Dallas is home, they're going to win. Not so sure. KC proved that they could go down to Texas and play in that heat and beat a very good team in D.C. last year. I'm not so sure it'll be so defensive this game. Both teams have very good coaching staff. I think because the first game was 28-21, which is very low scoring for KC for anybody that's seen their scores, I think that it might be a little bit more high scoring. It really depends on how healthy everyone is. I mean, six games into the season, how healthy is anybody? So it'll be an interesting game. Passion at the Force, finally we get a chance to see how the Eastern Conference matches up with the Western Conference. Passion are coming to the West, and Chicago's not really West, but it's west of Pittsburgh. So there you go. And since Boston already beat the Passion 29-0, and we're going to see how the Force match up. And if they can pull out a victory, we'll have some correlation between the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference. I mean, you really never know until two teams step on the field and battle each other. But, I mean, you can actually get a little bit of it out of it.
Erie and New England is a huge game as New England's fighting to stay in the playoff race. And then you have LA and Sacramento. That game right there is going to determine the West, the Pacific West right there. I mean, whoever wins that game has decided the playoff race, I would say. Because if Sacramento wins, they're in, no ifs, ands, buts about it. They just take care of business in the final 2 weeks. And I think they will. They play two tier two teams. LA loses, they're out. LA wins, they're most likely in if they can take care of the Breakers, the final, the Portland and the Breakers. But, I mean, they have a very difficult schedule. I know the Amazons have a lot of injuries right now. And I'm hoping that everybody heals up because I know a couple of their players, and I hope everything's fine over there. So this week, there's four major games to keep your eye on, with all of them having playoff implications. A loss by Pittsburgh knocks them out of the playoffs for sure. A loss by the Force really opens up the Midwest to all four of their teams, truthfully. All right, so in the final 2 weeks of the season, a lot of buys on the 29th and 5th, so there's not a lot of games. The ones that I'm most interested in, Clarksville, Atlanta. It's a Tier 2 going up against the Tier 1. They played a couple times now, I think, and Atlanta's always come out victorious, but I think Clarksville's a little bit better this year, and they really get to test themselves against a Tier 1 team, and like I talked about with Coach Holmes, you know, playing a Tier 1 team helps, even if you lose. So they'll really be able to bulk up their ranking if they're able to put on some sort of showing. Then you have D.C. and Boston, the rematch in Boston. Look for Boston to really, really secure their number one seed in that game. Do or die for D.C. because, I mean, a third loss might knock them out of the playoffs. And then a second loss to Boston will just demoralize them going in. But Boston would not want to play them three times, so they really want to make sure it's taken care of. Then you got the Sharks at the Passion, fighting for that spot right there, that final spot. That's another big game. You have the Scorpions and the Bandits playing each other twice. The Bandits have a chance to basically go 4-1 against Tier 1. And this will just reaffirm what I said at the beginning of the season about the Bay Area Bandits being a Tier 1 team, not a Tier 2 team. I mean, I'm glad they're not on my schedule this year, but they should have been Tier 1, and I've said that all along. I think you push rewind on last episode, and you'll find that out. And then the finale, the game to end all games, is really going to decide home field advantage for the Midwest, and that's the Force at the Tribe. It'll be interesting because this week we'll find out, is Dallas or KC in? And it just adds so much more pressure to that last game because if KC wins, then they're fighting for home field in the playoffs. If KC loses, they need to basically wreck Chicago's season and hope that they sneak in and all of a sudden just jump Chicago. And Chicago gets ousted. So, and that's some of the things that are really weird because the Amazons could win out at 6-2 and be in, and the Quake at 7-1 could be out, and then you might have Chicago at 7-1 be jumped by Dallas at 7-1 and Chicago or and KC at 6-2. So there's a lot of really bad and absurd things going on with the Massey ratings being incorporated. It's the system we're given. We'll do what we have to do. But hopefully, with each and every year, improvements are made to the way football is played. How about I've learned it that way? Because with good football being played, we don't need a rating system. If everybody's playing very good football and the scores are closed and there's not as many shutouts, then it should actually be no ratings whatsoever. Everybody, just keep working hard. Go to practice. Listen to your coaches. You know that the coaches are there for you. And send them emails. Ask questions. If you have basic football questions without scheme or anything like that, feel free to email me, headcoach@californiaquakefootball.com. Like I said, I spend lots of time. I love answering questions and sharing the knowledge with everybody. I've had a really good night. Hope I covered a lot, gave a lot of information out. Hope everybody's caught up on everything that's went in this season. Thank you again for Coach Holmes and Coach Konecki for being on. I really do appreciate it. I hope everybody sleeps well. And I will be back after week one of the playoffs to give you championship game previews and maybe talk to some people in Sweden while they're practicing for the game, or possibly Texas for sure. But I know that a couple of my players from the Quake are not playing in the Sweden game, are actually going to Sweden to cheer on teammates. So we may have some some little bit of that, and I'll definitely get some video from the practices and games so that I can share with what I saw with you. Hopefully I'll post it on our little website, CaliforniaQuakeFootball.com. Our highlights are always on there, and there's always links to the shows and stuff like that. So everybody, thank you so much, BJ. Thanks for running the board, putting the phone number and my email up there. Everybody who's listening, thanks for listening. It's been a great night. I am going to go eat dinner now. Try and get some energy, drink some water. I've been talking a lot tonight. Went a little bit over my time, 18 minutes to be exact, but that's okay because I think I used every single minute to inform you properly. Everybody have a great night. Good luck. Stay injury-free and play good football this weekend, and I'll talk to you in a couple weeks. Good night, everybody.